name is Brandy Ann Uemura. I'm a freelance writer who writes about meaning, life purpose, and spirituality on the BrandyAnnUemura.com and TheInspiringBee.com. I'm very excited to share my first audio interview with Tara Mandarano. She's a Best of the Neck nominated writer and editor and an advocate for patients in the mental health and chronic illness communities. So happy to have you here, Tara. It's very exciting. We've been trying to get this together for a while, but, you know, school schedules and the pandemic. So how are you doing?
Thank you so much, Brandy. Yes, it's been a hectic, extraordinary time for all of us. And I think it's been a while since we spoke, but I guess a lot has happened in both of our lives. But I'm doing well. I think all of us are kind of having our own unique experiences during this pandemic and doing the best we can to kind of get through each day and, you know, keep our sanity intact.
And, yes, definitely.
I think it's been a struggle probably for everyone, even if you've never experienced any serious mental health issues in your life. For me anyway, coming from a history where I have experienced things like anxiety and bipolar 2 and that type of thing, it's kind of interesting to see kind of the rest of the world or people that haven't been exposed to that situation kind of beginning to feel as if you know, that kind of panic or uncertainty and kind of feeling that they have lost, you know, the control over their lives that they kind of thought they had. So
yeah, definitely.
It's been a really, sorry, my throat is a little dry. Yeah. It's been interesting just to see that, you know, in the people that I know in my social circle.
Yeah, that's an interesting point I didn't think about. Do you think that people, you know, I also have chronic illness, but do you think people that have suffered from chronic illness and mental health issues have more resiliency in some way? It's interesting what you're talking about.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it actually mentioned a few times on social media in different articles, and I've actually been thinking about it a lot myself. And it makes sense that if you're a person, especially with with chronic pain or chronic health conditions, in my case, that's been things like endometriosis or fibromyalgia. A lot of people with invisible illnesses. I really apologize.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, if you need to get water.
I was on a Zoom call earlier, so my
voice
is scratchy.
Yeah.
But it makes sense that if you have any of these invisible illnesses and you're sort of already confined to a life where you're not really able to leave the house a lot, or you don't have the social life that a lot of your people in your life do, that you're kind of already used to kind of being isolated. And I've seen also people talk and write about, from a mental health perspective, if you are used to having kind of a low level anxiety on a daily basis, or you know, you live with something like bipolar, where you can swing from like a hypomanic state where you feel kind of very positive and productive, and then you kind of go to a different state where you feel more depressed and hopeless about the world. I think that a lot of people are experiencing maybe like a mild form of that in some ways, because I know even for myself, I'll have days, and I'm sure maybe you can relate, or even hours where you feel kind of normal, you feel like you can handle this, you feel like, you know, there's an end in sight, this can't go on forever. You know, the outlook is pretty good, and then there'll be kind of moments that will sneak up on you, or like in my case, they'll sneak up on me, and it's like, you know, what is happening? Like, what planet?
Yeah,
are we on? You know, what kind of alternate reality have we kind of landed into? So we're kind of, I think for a lot of people, you just kind of swing between these two different states of feeling like it's okay, and then feeling like it's not okay, and trying to be able to kind of balance that and be okay with the times when you do feel sad or scared about what's going to happen.
I think that's so true, and I think it's so validating, and it reminds me of what I love so much about your writing, and I think why you're such a big advocate, because you're just validating how I think many of us are feeling, a sense of, you know, learning a new normalcy. And maybe for those of us who have struggled, it feels kind of more, we're more used to it. But then other times it can get really intense. So thank you for saying that. I mean, I think a lot of people need to hear that. I think one of the biggest, you know, issues right now, even with my kids and for me, is just that lack of social engagement and that sense of validation and support that we are all going through that. So thank you for saying that. I think it's very comforting.
No problem. And it's, you know, it's also, like, I've talked about social media in the last few minutes, and it's also kind of trying to keep your expectations and your own sense of what you're doing, like, that it's enough in check, because from, like, even my own friends on Facebook or Instagram or that type of thing, and I've even done it myself, like, you want to be motivational and inspirational and positive for people, and especially parents. Being a parent, if you have a child or multiple children at home during this time and you're trying to deal with, you know, distance learning or homeschooling or that kind of thing.
Yes, definitely.
I find there's a lot of pressure. Like, I put a lot of pressure on myself, especially as a mother of an only child, that we're supposed to be doing all of these kind of great, interesting, entertaining things. Mm-hmm. And we have done things like, you know, my 6-year-old daughter and I have, you know, we've made a hopscotch, you know, design on our driveway out of chalk, and we've got, you know, spray paint, and we've done inspirational messages and put, you know, colored, you know, pictures and put them in the window and that kind of thing. You know, I've done things that I never would have thought that I had the capability to do as a mother, because a lot of those artsy, craftsy types of things aren't really kind of where I would tend to go as a mother. So if somebody had said to me 6 months ago, you're going to be, like, painting pine cones or like rocks that you kind of collect on a walk, I would have thought, you know, they didn't know anything about me. Yeah. But I find that on social media, and especially, like, on the internet, there's so many articles on how to keep your kids occupied, how to entertain them, how to do all these things. And I think in the first couple of weeks of quarantine, at least where I am in Canada, outside Toronto, it's been about, like, as of a few days ago, it's been 6 weeks that we've been sort of under this quarantine. And I think for both my husband and I and my daughter, the first week or two were kind of like a novelty.
Yeah,
this is something different. This is kind of something cool. Like, you know, my daughter was like, oh, I get to spend all this more time with you guys. Yeah. And you know, we were like, we got to be on top of all these school assignments and what's the latest project and thing that we have to do. And then we kind of noticed in the last couple of weeks that was kind of all going downhill. My daughter in particular has some, you know, is kind of anxious by nature and has some sensory processing issues. And it got to the point where we scheduled, you know, a virtual meeting with our occupational therapist, our OT, just to kind of get some support and further strategies. And she said something really interesting to us, and that was basically that all of the kids that she deals with basically on a regular basis were kind of going through the same thing that we were going through in our house, which is that the first couple of weeks, or even just week one, everything was fine and everything was kind of doable. And then as the second or third week kind of rolled around, the motivation on the part of the children and the parents had started to wane, and for the kids especially, you know, particularly kids who need routine and have sensory issues, like the lack of their ordinary life, being able to see their friends, their cousins, their families, the anxiety that they're maybe picking up on around the house, that kind of thing. Like the OT was telling us basically that all of these things combined were leading to more like severe manifestations of of, you know, children's behavior and emotions kind of just being more difficult to handle, both for the children and the parents. So I guess what my point is that you kind of, in my situation, I kind of take it with a grain of salt when I see all these suggestions and stuff that people are doing with their kids, because it's great if you have that, you know, talent and you have that patience, mm-hmm. and you know, you can motivate your kids to do all those things. But if you're in a situation where you have mental health issues, or your child is having issues, or you're just a normal family that is just kind of like,
yes.
run down by the stress of all this, you kind of, I would advise people not to beat themselves up about,
yes.
it too much, and kind of to do what you can.
I definitely think that's true. I mean, I think it's funny that before this, everybody was, you know, in a rat race and busy and trying to, you know, had the pressure of doing everything perfectly. And then there's this opportunity now where we really can't do very much, and yet the pressure is still high. And so, I do think it's a learning lesson for everybody, you know, about how do we step back and maybe just learn how to breathe and just be together in the best way that we can, and stop putting all that pressure on ourselves as parents. And I think especially for people with, you know, mental health issues or chronic illness, we have more on our plate. And sometimes, I don't know if you think this is true too, but I do think in some ways, even for me, being more sensitive, we tend to put more pressure on ourselves anyway. And so this is just a good opportunity to kind of step back and use it as more of a time to heal and rest, because I don't think we do enough of that. So yeah.
No, we don't. And I think it's very hard to get out of that, like you were saying, rat race,
mm-hmm.
mindset, or like social media.
The pressures of that, definitely.
Like the highlight reel mindset. And you know, even I've been aware of it, like, you know, oh, we did this thing on the drive-by, let's take a picture,
yeah.
of it, or, you know, let's post it, like, let's,
yeah.
show people, you know, what we're doing okay, we're doing this fun stuff. And yet what you don't see behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, like, your kid not wanting to take the picture, or like already onto something else, and like,
yes.
having to bribe them to take a picture.
I've heard somebody say, like, one of the people who do podcasts, she was saying her mission is to really show, you know, the other side also of being a parent, and which is not always pretty or Instagram worthy, but of the difficulty. And I try to do that too, because there is so much pressure, and, you know, sometimes I have to take myself off of social media so I don't feel that pressure, because I'm sensitive as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, like, learning how to do that for ourselves so that we don't, you know, pass it on to our kids, and because it's hard for everybody right now. And I just wanted to ask you too, you know, how did you get started in this? Because you are just naturally such a passionate person, so validating, and just able to write in such an authentic voice. Like, I really admire you. I follow you and I read your writing. How did you get started in writing? Like, were you always wanting to be a writer?
I think I did from quite an early age, but I think I just did, you know, just I enjoyed it, or maybe it came naturally at a younger age, but I don't think I had any actual realization or kind of dream of doing it until maybe I was a teenager, and I got like into like maybe like the bad poetry stage.
Yeah.
You don't really maybe
too.
Realize it at the time,
yeah.
but you know, you think you're like a genius or whatever.
It wasn't
until maybe like high school when you kind of start thinking, what am I going to do at the end of these 4 or 5 years? And I remember I won like a little award when I was in, I don't know, grade 11 or 12. And it was kind of like based on my own family. And it was sent like, here we have provinces as opposed to states. So since like the competition was like at a provincial level. So I remember winning that and thinking, wow, like, you know, I must not be too bad if, you know, this came through and everyone was so happy. And then I decided to go to journalism school for university.
Mm.
But I distinctly remember as a teen, or maybe kind of, you know, late teens, maybe the end of high school, somehow somebody gave me this like little letter writing kit. And I remember just writing myself a letter into the future, and I don't know, I must have been like maybe 17 or 18, so like the front of the envelope said like, do not open until you're 25, mm-hmm. which seemed like a long time ago, like, oh, you'd be like a real adult by then. And I found it years later, and one of the things in it was like, I hope that you are writing, or that you're a writer. And I think when I read that or found that, I wasn't quite at that stage. I was doing other stuff in my career, and I had moved to Dublin for seven years, so I wasn't really doing it like full time, or the passion hadn't really been fully ignited. So it wasn't until probably my daughter was born about 7 years ago that the floodgates kind of opened, in terms of, you talk about being like transparent, or being really authentic or real with the writing. Mm-hmm. Having gone through like something like postpartum depression or anxiety, I found that writing was my only way to get through it, and my only way to get out of it. And I guess what I would say is it's continued to this day. I mean, I was always kind of a writer before that, or wrote poetry, but in terms of writing personal essays and things that really are revealing and emotional and very personal stuff, that started about 7 years ago, and I've just continued with it. And I've had such amazing feedback from people in my real life and online, that it's just kept me going. And I'd say it's like 50-50. Half of it is for me, because it's healing and how I process my life, and the other part is for the other people out there that are perhaps going through the same thing, whether that be mental health problems, chronic pain issues, or even something maybe that you wouldn't necessarily think about, but which there's a huge community, is parents of only children, which is, you know, one of my greatest responses to essays that I've ever written was, you know, I've written a couple now, is about the, you know, coming to terms with the guilt of having one child, you know, coming to terms with the fact that, you know, I had to protect my mental health, and that meant having one child instead of two. Like, there's a lot of different people with stories out there that they don't necessarily talk about, and just being able to reach those people just means everything to me.
Well, I'm just so interested in hearing your story, and I kind of wonder, when you're thinking about writing, and how do you have the courage to be so open about what you decide to write about? That's one question I have for you. And I also wanted to know, how do you, when you're writing about the different topics, like, are you envisioning who your reader is, or are you just, you know, writing it all on paper? Like, what inspires you?
I think in most cases, it starts off as like a processing thing, a healing thing, an exercise to see what I'm thinking and feeling about an experience, and then as I go on, the perspective of the people who would be reading it, or what they would take away from it, also enters the essay. Like, I worked with different editors, and they don't want you to write just a straight piece of just, you know, your own particular story and the specific details of what happened to you. What they really want is for people to be able to take a general message from it that they can apply to their own lives, so that it's more universal. So I try to keep that in mind when I'm writing. And in terms of being like brave to put myself out there or write about such personal, private things in my life, like I said, it started after my daughter was born, and it sort of, I think, going through the experiences that I did around that time that were very difficult and dark in many moments, it was a way for me to survive. And I've never been like a public speaker or a very extroverted person, kind of life of the party, or somebody kind of in that type of role. So for me, I've always found writing is the way that I communicate best, the way that I can get what I really want to say out without feeling awkward and self-conscious. So I think there's also like a, you feel like there's a bit of a distance between writing something and maybe like giving a public talk and seeing people in front of you or saying that type of thing to someone's face. I have given some, I have done some public speaking, and it's definitely a bit more nerve-wracking, but I think I feel so comfortable behind the screen or like just with the keyboard that when it goes out there, I feel like it's, I feel like it's the real me, as opposed to maybe just, you know, having like a small talk conversation with somebody. So once I kind of got into that type of communication, it was very hard to sort of pull back and just, you know, write about things that I didn't feel passionate about. And of course I've done it because there's not a lot of, not a lot of money in personal essay writing or like that type of thing. So I've, you know, I've written, you know, corporate stuff, and I do editing and that type of thing. But like you said, the real passion that I have is for these personal articles or essays that are, that I do try to make authentic, because I feel like that is the best way to reach people and for them to actually see themselves in it. Is it always easy to put that stuff out there and, you know, include sometimes people in those essays that maybe, you know, don't want to be included or don't want to be, don't want their part of the story out there? It's not easy at all. And when I first started out, I had to, you know, I had conversations with my husband, and he wasn't initially always kind of on board with especially the only child's process and decision of that, like being out there for public consumption. But then once we talked about it and he realized that this was sort of my therapy and way to get through it and heal from it, he kind of came around to the point of view that it was necessary for me. And
I can tell
how we,
I was going to say that I think you're bringing up what I was thinking, is that even though there's a fear of being vulnerable, because you know, I read, I'm in a lot of different writing groups, and a lot of writers are so afraid to not even show something in a personal essay, but just to write or to submit anywhere because of the fear of being vulnerable, of being rejected. And so, yeah, I mean, for you to be able to put it all out there, it's even more admirable in my eyes, because you're being, you're sharing something that's true to you about your own personal life. And the only thing that's keep coming up in my head is that it's healing and it's freeing, and you, because of the passion, that you can overcome that fear of putting yourself out there, because you know that it's going to be making a difference. And that's why I think it's so powerful, because you're writing about it in that energy.
Yeah, and to be honest, for me, like when I used the word necessary a few minutes ago, like that's entirely what it is. And it's, like I said, 7 years ago, I became this person that started doing this, sharing myself and sharing parts of my life, the good and the bad, you know, the, and I can't go back to the person that I was before, and I don't want to. And it, you know, it doesn't mean, like I said, it hasn't led to some awkward conversations and people in my life not always understanding or wondering like why I would do that, or you know what I would get out of it, or you know, is it attention seeking, is it like a stream of negativity, is it, you know, what if somebody reads this, like your daughter in 10 years, and you know, doesn't appreciate it? And honestly my answer is I don't think that I would be able to survive from like psychologically and from a mental health perspective if I couldn't do this. And that's maybe kind of like a severe shocking thing to say, but I mentioned that I also have bipolar 2 disorder, and part of that condition, when you're in the hypomanic or kind of more high form of the condition, is for me anyway, that translates into increased energy and productivity and creativity. So what that means for me is when I'm going through that phase, which may be, you know, 3 or 4 days or whatever, a week, even though I am taking medication for it to like try and stabilize myself, sometimes it still happens where one of the biggest things that comes out of that is the urgency and the need to write.
Wow.
And that doesn't necessarily always correspond to like 9 to 5 hours, like 9 to 5 workday kind of hours. Often for me, in my experience, it would be something like I will go to bed at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and all of a sudden, all of these words and ideas and phrases will start coming to me like an avalanche. And then I'm sitting there thinking, should I write it down? Should I email myself? Should I text myself? If I don't, will I remember this? And the answer is no. So often my husband will like see me like furiously typing on my phone, you know, kind of very late at night. And then the next day, you know, that will turn into something, or I will kind of create something out of that. So the creative part for me, like, I think it's quite common knowledge that it often goes with bipolar. It's not everyone, obviously, as a stereotype, is, you know, just because you have bipolar that you're creative, but it is the case with a lot of people. So for me, if I was sitting there going through those 3 or 4 days and just suppressing it and not kind of writing anything down or getting it out, I think that it would make that time much worse.
Yeah.
And it's like a compulsion, and it's you know, there's sometimes where it's very annoying. You don't want to be like trying to go to sleep, and you don't want to be like texting yourself like fragments of sentences or, you know, possible article headlines or whatever, like the strangest things that might come to you. But in the other sense, I kind of take it as a gift and something that is good that comes out of this mental health condition that can be very difficult, especially when you swing to the opposite end where it's a bit more dark and low and depressing. So for me, it's making the most out of it. And it's like I said, I need to do it.
Yeah.
I need to do it to kind of get by. And often, like you were talking about submitting to different publications and the fear of rejection, you know, I submit to a lot of places, I pitch, that type of thing, but sometimes I will find if I'm in the moment where something is really, I need to really get something out, I won't wait to pitch it somewhere to get it officially published. I will write it on Facebook or Instagram because the need for me to get it out as soon as possible is just more overwhelming than just having to go through like a week's long process of waiting to hear back from an editor and then writing it and editing
it. I think that's really good advice, actually.
So
I think that's really good advice if somebody has like a message and maybe they're a little bit hesitant because they don't want to send it out somewhere big, to just start publishing somewhere, you know, just to get used to it.
And you never know, like, you never know who's seeing it or who's like watching you. I mean, on Facebook, I've got quite a few people as friends, and I've added them a lot of people, like friends of friends myself, if they're, you know, a creative type or writer, that type of, I have a lot of people that I've encountered through different writing groups on Facebook and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I wrote something, I don't even know when it was, I think it was late last year, around the holidays, where I think my mother had bought us like a little, not a gingerbread house, but like a house made out of like Kit Kats.
Oh.
like a Christmas house that you're supposed to make out of Kit Kats, and it looked super delicious. It looked amazing on the box, and whatever my husband was doing, he wasn't there, he wasn't involved, and it came this thing, okay, this is going to be a mother-daughter moment.
Mm.
Even though I looked at the box and thought, oh my God, I've never done this before.
Yeah.
This is really not my thing. And actually, my husband and daughter had done one the previous year, and it had turned out amazing. So I knew that I was up against like
pressure.
Previous results and the pressure of doing it. Like, it just And I remember that it did not turn out as well, and there was some frustration on the part of my daughter because she had done this before and it looked better last time. And then there was like this insecurity in me because I'm like, I can't even put a simple Kit Kat house together. Mm. And so I wrote about it, and it wasn't a very long post, but it was just like, you know, tonight I'm that mother that can't manage to put a, you know, a chocolate house together, and I feel, you know, I feel bad about it, and I feel like I'm not a good mom, and, you know, people replied and commiserated and that kind of thing. And then, like, a couple days later, I got an email from a Canadian editor here who has a website, and not necessarily parent-focused, but she was looking to kind of have more parenting content on her site, and she said, I saw your story about, like, the failed Kit Kat house. And I saw, like, the different, you know, different parents responding and trying to tell you it was okay, and they had similar experiences, and you don't necessarily always read about that. And she's like, you know, I'd like you to start writing, you know, as a regular parenting article for us, like,
that
every couple of weeks, whatever.
Wow.
And that just showed me, like, you know, if you put yourself out there, you know, whether it's just people that can see themselves in your writing and contacting you to tell you that, or like an editor or somebody else that sees your work or like likes your voice, like, it's worth just trying it, because if you don't try, you'll never know, and the worst that can happen is that somebody will say no. But as I've found, even if one editor says no, doesn't mean that your writing or your essay isn't good. It just means it's not the right fit, and someone else might love it.
I think that's really great advice, and gosh, I'm noticing the time is just flying by so quickly, and you're giving so much good advice. I know. You're giving, like, I think all the writers that are listening will be able to get so much out of your words and, like, the wisdom that you have. And I'm so excited about your book that you wanted to talk about that came out, and I wanted to ask you about that, Big Stories About Life in Plus Size Bodies. Could you tell me a little bit about it, when it came out, and if anything has changed since, you know, you're not able to do in-person meetings and
yeah, it's been the most extraordinary experience, because before our call, I actually looked up my emails to see when I submitted, because you had said you were interested in a timeline, and I went back, and it turned out it was like March of last year, 2019, where I submitted this essay, and it was titled being a size 12 girl in a size 2 world or something like that. And initially I was very hesitant to even like post, you know, or like apply to be in the book, because when I read about the subject matter, about being plus sized, and I read like the full description of what the book was going to be about, I got the impression, like, when they say, like, big, like, that's the name of it, and plus size, I'm thinking, I don't know where I fit into that category. You know, over the years, my weight has fluctuated due to hormones, due to chronic illness, medications, that kind of thing, and I knew in my heart that I have obviously gone through a lot of transformations. My body is not the same as it was in my 20s, but I wasn't sure if my transformations were enough to a scale that would be, you know, qualify to be in this book. And I emailed the editor, and Christina Myers, and she was like, I've been getting so many messages about the exact same thing, like, how big do you have to be included in big? And I was honest with her, and I said, you know, right now I'm like between like a size 12 and 14, but, you know, I'm worried that if you're looking for people that are, you know, size 20 or 22 or 24, like, maybe this isn't the right fit. And she said, you know what, just write your essay, send it in, and we'll see. And I heard back maybe a couple months later, and I was fully expecting to get a rejection, because I'd written the essay kind of in one go. I think I got my husband to copy edit it, but I hadn't shown it to any other writers or whatever to get feedback. Oh. And she wrote back, and she said, I'd love to include it. And I was
so
flabbergasted, because A, this is going to be like an actual
Oh my
physical
God,
book
yeah,
that you
that's
could buy in a
awesome.
bookstore, an anthology.
Yeah.
And I've never been included in anything like that before. Most of my writing, as you probably know, is online. So the thrill of being part of this book was just amazing. And it's, you know, it's from a small Canadian publisher called Caitlin Press. They do amazing work. And so it took, the whole process took from, I guess, March last year, and then it was published in February of this year, so I guess it's about nearly a year's process.
Wow.
But after having never gone through this experience at all, I was so pleasantly surprised at how much we were updated as authors throughout the entire experience through editing, copy editing. They ended up changing my title because it was far too long. So it went from what I said to My Body's Civil War. That's the name of my essay.
Oh, nice.
Because it kind of goes back to like what I was saying about chronic illness and hormones and things that are sort of out of your actual control with your body. Like you feel like you're fighting yourself.
I think so many people can relate to that. That's
yeah,
that's
like
awesome.
It's just a lot of people. A lot of the other essayists in the book, you know, talked about, you know, they were much more, you know, about fat activism and, you know, accepting themselves and the advantages that they saw of being plus size, where from my point of view, it was more like, I'm trying to accept my body and it's not what it was, but I'm having like, I go back and forth and I'm not completely comfortable with it. And this is, these are the things that have happened to me that make me feel this way. So but the sad part in terms of the pandemic, and you mentioned about like doing things in person, is that you're supposed to have this really amazing launch party here in Toronto on St. Patrick's Day, actually, and you know, to meet the authors that were in the area, because some of them were from different parts of the country and UK, and I think even some in the US. And it was kind of like the week before that, you know, everything, the schools here were like, were shutting down. Everything just suddenly, you know, all the sports leagues were like canceled. And it just became very obvious very quickly that it was not going to be appropriate to have like a party in this climate and, you know, physically having that amount of people in it in one space. So that's like one of the little griefs or disappointments that I think a lot of people are feeling, like, it's not, you know, there's much worse things going on in the world, but there's still a lot of things
still,
in people's lives that are important to them that they've kind of missed out on. And you're allowed to feel, you know, sad about that. So, but overall, the experience has been really positive. Being able to go to like several different bookstores and see the book on the shelf.
That is so cool.
That's like a writer's dream come true. And, you know, having my husband and daughter come with me and like being able to document that, I was so grateful that I was able to do that before everything kind of shut down, because at least I had that experience of doing that. And despite like, you know, the launch party being canceled or postponed, the publisher has actually been really good about, we've done like a couple of virtual readings and that type of stuff. So it's been, it's not like all has been lost, but I do hope in the future that, you know, I could do like some signings and that type of thing. But
well, for right now,
it's just taking your writing to a new level, right? It's just something exciting.
Was there any way for people who want to find out more about the book, or if you're doing any of those online book readings, that you can tell us about so we can check it out?
Yeah, well, in terms of the book itself, it should be available at all like major retailers, like, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, even on the Caitlin Press website. In terms of the actual readings themselves, I would probably have to send you like a couple of links.
Oh, definitely, yeah,
so
send it
to
me.
To let you know where to find them if you wanted to include them somewhere. But for me, it was just amazing to kind of, even if you couldn't meet these people in person, you could see them online and hear them read parts of their essay. And
that'd be
it
so
was kind of
see.
Like the next best thing to actually being in person. So Yeah, I would encourage anyone that's, even if you're not plus size, or if you've had any issues or mixed feelings about your body, or you're completely comfortable with your body and you are of a certain size and you're okay with that and you just want to celebrate it. There's like such a diverse range of essays in the book that I think, like the editor says, there's kind of something for everyone in there, depending on, what stage you're at with your relationship with your body.
I think that's great. I will put in the notes on my website, your website, which is taramandarano.com. So it's M Tara, TaraMandarano.com. And then on Instagram, they can follow you at taramandarano.com. And I'll put in all the notes, and if you have information or links, I'll add that in as well. I just wanted to thank you so much. You're just so inspiring to me, and even being able to talk with you on the phone and it just feels like I got to know you in another level, and so I really appreciate it. You're just a beautiful
Thank
writer
you
and a
so
beautiful
much.
person.
I've always felt like you're a kindred spirit,
Oh, thank you.
Brandy, and I so enjoy talking to you. You have amazing questions, and I just would be so happy to inspire or read other writers out there who, like you said, are maybe afraid to put themselves out there or afraid of rejection. I would just encourage them to kind of keep writing. Find your own voice, and like I said, if you are too intimidated to submit somewhere, or you think it's going to take too long, and you just want to practice your craft, just get it out there in whatever way you can. If you have a blog or Facebook or Instagram, depends on how comfortable you are, obviously, with people seeing it. But in my experience, it's the more real and authentic you are, the more people appreciate it because it's not the norm. And so when they stumble across it, they're like, hey, this is actually like something that I could relate to. And I'm actually going to tell a bit of my story now because I feel like if she can do it, then I can do it. So
Definitely, and I think
that's
because
an
it's a hard
amazing
thing to
gift to
do.
me.
It's a hard thing to do. So when somebody sees you putting yourself out there, people, like me who read it, and other, you have a big fan base. Like when they read it, they feel like you're speaking to them and you're speaking for them. And I think that's why you have so much of a following and people appreciate your words. So, yeah, again, thank you so much. I really enjoy talking with you, and I wish you the best, and I hope that we can keep in touch after this as well.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to do more conversations in the future and touch base. That would be great.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Brandy.
Thank you.